Chapter 26 Lunch with the Baron. Baron Arathaniel of Sendaria was the kind of noble you encounter in stories, not in real life. I'd heard about him often enough in my first few months in the Bontal region, and you can tell a lot about a man from how he deals with his underlings and subordinates, how he handles adversity and dissension. Over the course of the next hour, I felt I got to know him enough to know what kind of man he was. He was the very picture of a feudal baron. He was a charismatic leader, a wise judge of character, with a generous yet cautious character and a casual conversational style that put you at ease, until it became a sharp knife at your throat. Arathaniel was a self-possessed man who understood exactly who he was and why the gods had deigned to put him in his station, and he really resented anyone disturbing his fare. It took 20 minutes for the Baron to round up enough guards and wardens to disarm the censors and secure them, against their protest, when the leader, his name was Dalrent, haughtily declared that he was above a duke's justice, much less a baron's. Arathaniel wasn't intimidated. Instead, he looked over Dalrent like he was a piece of beef that had gone off, and grunted. "Did you and your men pay admission to enter the fairgrounds?" he asked.
"They would not admit us without it," Dalrent dismissed. "A few pennies, it was no matter."
"And did you not swear the fair oath when you paid your admission? In front of a coin, brother?" A few of them had the grace to look guilty, but not Dalrent. He looked entitled.
"What of it?"
"Well, when you swore to that oath, you swore not to start any fights, and you swore yourself to the Baron's justice if you did. I'm the Baron. I hold the commonest serf to that rule, as an oath sworn is an oath sworn, and every man the custodian of his own honour. Is your honour not prized so highly?" That shut them up. Baron Arathaniel listened to several eyewitnesses of the brawl before he questioned any of the principals. After the fifth or sixth witness, he nodded and dismissed them. About that time, his aide arrived, toting a lap desk and a face full of sweat. It was getting even hotter. The Baron didn't seem to notice it. Once the aide arrived, however, Arathaniel turned the clean-up over to him, and then insisted all of us repair to his pavilion so that he could dispose of the case. Along the way, I got to watch him in action. It was informative. He seemed to know about every fifth person in the crowd well enough to greet them by name, and twice that many he recognized. By the time our 20-minute walk was done, he had greeted at least 200 people, asked them detailed questions or exchanged jokes, and generally behaved more like a party host than a reigning baron. In between bows and pleasantries, we talked.
"Sevendor, eh?" he said, smiling fondly. "I've been there, in my youth. My family used to own it. Heard it was just this side of Tarion's chamber pot these days."
I couldn't imagine why the cantankerous god of the sea would need a chamber pot, but the description was apt. "We are recovering now, Your Excellency, with a little hard work and a lot of investment."
"Well, I appreciate the business," he said. "My toll revenues have been more than double than last year's, as have my dock fees."
"It is my pleasure to enrich Your Excellency," I agreed. "We Sevendori have found a pleasant welcome in Sendaria." He laughed like a braying mule over that.
"Ah, yes, the Lord Bird of West Flaria," he chuckled. "I'd heard about what you've been doing to his frontiers. He was not happy with your bold move, taking back his stolen lands. I hear he has been hiring mercenaries to harass your frontiers. Watch him. He schemes to rule us all, the idiot.
He hasn't enough gold or men to seriously threaten, particularly against War Magi. He's been more of a nuisance than anything else."
"Nuisance is perhaps the nicest thing anyone has called him," the Baron chuckled. He glanced at me for a second more than was comfortable. "But I've been paying attention. There are still a few kinsmen of mine in the old countries, and I hear news."
That was the polite way of saying, "I have a crackerjack domestic spying operation." I was learning how to interpret noblesse. "It gives my men an opportunity to practice their arms," I dismissed, and so far he has enriched my coffers more than my peasantry, thanks to his ill-conceived vendetta. In truth, I cannot claim to be completely uninterested, he said in a slightly lower tone of voice. Until these troubles with Sevendor, Gimbal was eyeing some of my southern lands. He has a habit of weaseling his way into a fight, and then stealing away what's dear when your back is turned. Since he became preoccupied with his southern frontier, he has left mine alone. My gratitude, he said with a smirk. I smiled back. My pleasure to be of service, Excellency, although I find it difficult to believe that Gimbal would be so foolish as to consider attacking Sandaria. Oh, he wouldn't do it outright. That's not his style, mused the Baron as he walked. He stopped a moment to accept a gift of an apple from a vendor, inquired about his children and mother, and then we continued as he ate it. My apologies. During the fair I rarely keep regular meals. As I was saying, Gimbal prefers treachery and deceit to open warfare. Am I to construe from your flattery that you wish an alliance? You are to construe from my statement that I can count, Excellency, I replied politely. From my estimation, your Excellency's troops should outnumber the warbirds by 81 lances and a few thousand peasants. When professional soldiers of the noble persuasion measure their arms against each other, they do so in terms of lances. One lance originally meant one mounted heavy cavalryman, but the term has come to mean the inclusion of four other men, infantry, archery, scouts or artillery, and support, in the count. So every lance was actually five or so men contributing to the force in total. But since heavy cavalry counts for more among the lords of the duchies, that's how they count them. He looked at me, surprised. That was my polite way of saying, I have a crackerjack domestic spying operation too. You are not far wrong, Sire Minolan. So, you're a mage lord. Interesting. Am I not what you expected, sire? I asked pleasantly. I do my best not to have expectations, Arathaniel informed me. Expectations limit our perceptions. I let a man's deeds speak for him. That was too much for the taciturn censors who walked silently and sullenly behind us. Then your excellency should be clapping this man in irons and his entire coven of oathbreakers, for by his actions he has violated some of the most sacred laws of our land and perverted others to join him in his crimes, Dalrin said harshly. By his actions, sire, he has opened the door to chaos and abuse. Actually, from what I've heard, he nearly single-handedly stopped a goblin invasion of Alshar last summer, he told the censor lightly, as if they were discussing horse racing. What were you doing last summer, Censor Dalrent? There was a moment of silence, but it was clear the Baron expected an answer. I was hunting witches in the swamps of Rendiol, he admitted. We flushed out a coven of six. Baron Arathaniel feigned being impressed. Six whole witches? How puissant! Sire Minolan, by all accounts, slew trolls galore and hundreds of goblins. Is that correct, Sire Minolan? Not precisely, Your Excellency, I said apologetically. The numbers are more in the tens of thousands. I thought of the hideous giant fire elemental we'd conjured to burn our furry enemies alive. Tens of thousands, I nodded. See, tens of thousands, and trolls, compared to your six witches. Now, if I were to judge a man by the greatness of his deeds, on which side of the scale would you fall, Censor Dalrent, if measured against Sire Minolan? I have been dedicated to my duty, Excellency, the censor insisted. We who take the cloak are not motivated by glory or greatness, Excellency, merely decency, tradition, and the law. The king's law, he emphasized. Yes, well, your dedication may do you credit, Censor Dalrent, mused Arathaniel, but your failure to abide by the rules of the fair are the issue of the moment, he said, as we arrived at his pavilion. The guards flanking the doorway came to attention at once, and I was impressed. Not with the guards, but with the pavilion. I thought my new pavilion was grand, but Baron Arathaniel's was magnificent by any standards. At least 5 times the size of my suddenly humbled affair, there were 5 centre poles arrayed in a circle large enough to make a racetrack. It was dyed blue and white stripes, and each stripe, I saw, was an entire bolt of cloth. There were huge vents in the top of it to let in light and let smoke escape, vents big enough to drive a wagon through. In fact, there was a separate entrance for wagons. I stood there gawking like a 5-year-old before Tyndall grabbed my sleeve and pulled.
"It's just a tent, master," he said to me, mirthfully,
"and you're just an apprentice. Do you realize we could fit all of Sevendore Castle in here? At least the keep." Once inside, the Baron led us through a maze of rooms where clerks and officials were conducting the fair's business, particularly the tax revenue being generated, tracked, and gathered. The clink of coin was constant as we consulted with the Baron. We came to a small room near the center of the structure, which appeared to be his field office. Within the canvas walls were a trestle table, 5 or 6 chairs, maps of the fairgrounds, account books, scrolls, inkwells, coffers, a few chests, and a battered old cupboard. Baron Arathaniel gestured to the chairs for the rest of us, but took his seat behind the table. "At last," he said with a relieved sigh as he settled into his chair. "Now that we're out of the common eye, we can discuss this altercation. Your men swore to the fair's peace when you entered. Correct, Censor Dalrent?"
"Yes, sire,"
Dalrent began. "But, and did you, in violation of the peace, bear cold steel in an offensive manner within the bounds of the fair?"
"Our mage blades, yes, but in the performance—"
"And were your men the first to strike?" he interrupted sharply.
"Well, after discussion, sire, it was decided—"
"Just answer the question," he directed flatly. I studied the way he said it. I was used to military commands, of course, having given and taken my share, but it wasn't quite the same thing. A military commander gives an order and expects it to be obeyed. A lord in his domain gives a command and then dares you, with his voice, not to follow it. A world of hurt implied in a simple inflection. I occasionally did it myself, I realized. I would do it more now. It was effective. Dalrent's eyes dropped to the floor, like a boy caught peeing on the temple grounds during services.
"Yes, sire. That's what I needed to know. For violation of the fair's peace, a fine of 1 ounce of silver for each of your men and ejection from the fair. That's the standard punishment for gentlemen."
"But your excellency—"
"Yes, sire,"
Dalrent said, realizing at a glance that Arathaniel wasn't about to budge on this. I made certain to note that he had just made 5 ounces of silver. "In addition, the blades you bore will be confiscated. The wands and such you can keep. You didn't swear not to bear any offensive magic," he said wryly.
"Perhaps an inclusion for next year, sire?" I suggested.
"I'm beginning to think that having you as a neighbour makes that prudent, mage lord," he agreed.
"But your excellency," protested Dalrent. "What of his men? 10, 11,
he corrected, although I thought he miscounted.
"All bearing steel. What of them? Where is his fine?"
"Is that true, mage lord?" he asked.
"Actually,"
I said, drawing the word out, "my apprentice, Sir Tyndall of Sevendore, was engaged in the swordplay competition at the time." Tyndall bowed with a mockery of grace. Those other gentlemen were his competitors, merely there to see what the excitement was, I explained.
"But they were brandishing swords," Dalrent exploded. "I saw them."
"They were holding swords," I corrected. "Baron, ask any of those men, under oath, whether or not they were planning on attacking anyone."
"But they still had blades,"
Dalrent insisted. "Blunted for competition," I observed, "but there was no sharper steel upon us than my dagger, which remained in its sheath. Even my apprentice's mage blade, it seems. A pity. It was once mine. I carried it in Faris, and I hate to see a good blade dulled on purpose."
"Oh, here. Give me these, then,"
Arathaniel said, absently shoving the censor's mage blades at me. I have no use for them, and I am appreciative of the care you took with the crowd. A little excitement at the fair is one thing. Funerals at the fair are bad for business. So, in gratitude, he said, encouraging me to take the swords. I bowed as deeply as I could in my chair. My thanks, Baron Arathaniel. I shall put them to good use. Now, do you have any other business before me? He asked Censor Dalrent, his voice helpful. Dalrent's face was sour.
Yes, sire, he began. I wish to request your assistance in apprehending this criminal and his entire gang, he accused angrily.
Under codes of the royal bands of magic, we are entitled to request such assistance from local lords as needed. I am not familiar with the intricacies of the bands, Arathaniel admitted, but if I recall, the exact wording says that the dukes shall render assistance to the censorate upon request, and that at the direction of his liege, that any vassal of the duke was compelled to do likewise under his direction. Is that correct?
Near enough,
Dalrent nodded. Then I will be happy to assist you, Censor Dalrent, the moment you produce a request from His Grace Duke Rad, giving you a warrant to do so.
But, Your Excellency, that could take weeks.
We bear a warrant already from the Censor of Rhaemir, and Rad has openly, that's Duke Rad, by the grace of the gods, and my sworn liege lord, Censor, and you shall offer him due respect in my presence, or we shall have far more to discuss today than a brawl. Ouch. Now that was the way to slap a man back in place. Dalrent swallowed.
Yes, sire. Surely you must appreciate how important it is for us to apprehend and place under arrest this man while we have him in custody before he can summon help or try to escape.
I don't believe I actually am in anyone's custody, I pointed out, and I'm not planning to escape. I paid for the whole week. It doesn't sound like the Mage Lord is avoiding you, gentlemen, Arathaniel observed. If you can get a warrant from His Grace before he leaves, then I will be happy to render whatever assistance I am legally compelled to. But it is my understanding that you might find such a warrant hard to come by these days. His eyes twinkled with merriment he wouldn't let his words convey.
If Duke Rad will not cooperate with us, there are other duchies,
Dalrent said insistently. Then let their duke's liege men enforce your warrant in their duchies. In Castal, Duke Rad's word is final. He said so when I swore him fealty, and I believe him. If he says don't cooperate with the censorate, then I am bound by honour and oath to comply. So it's really out of my hands, gentlemen, he said, spreading his hands apologetically. I don't think he was particularly sincere. I could really get to like this baron. Dalrent's eyes were angry, but he had control over his emotions. He straightened and looked at me with derision and disgust.
As you wish, sire. I cannot compel you, legally, he added, but I would take care about making a foe of the censorate, Baron. We have a long memory, and we are powerful magi.
And I'm more powerful than the lot of you, magically, and it seems temporally, too. Your Excellency, I pledge now to do my utmost to undo any magical retribution the censorate tries to arrange for you. I wouldn't be too worried about it, considering their comparative impotency, but if they try, I shall endeavour to put it right. That's gracious of you, Mage Lord, he said, using the title for the first time. Dalrent winced. I wasn't the only one who'd noticed it. Censor Dalrent, I shall have one of my bailiffs escort you and your men to the frontiers of my domain. Or see you embark at the riverport. Your choice, by sundown tonight. You've lost your fair rights for breaking your oath, and during the fair, no business is permitted in my domain without my leave. That includes the hunting of magi of any sort. Let me be clear. May the gods bless your journey and see you to your destination in safety. Now get the hell out of my tent. A bailiff was summoned and escorted Dalrent and his men grimly out of the room. I was about to rise myself when the Baron motioned for me to keep my seat. If you don't mind indulging me, Mage Lord, I am famished, and I'd like for you to join me.
Much has been said about you.
Much,
he said for emphasis, as he stroked his beard. I've listened, but I think now the gods have given me a chance to hear from the pig snout. Could I impose on you to have luncheon with me?
I would be honoured, Excellency, I said, bowing from the waist. Let me just instruct my apprentice, I said, closing my eyes.
Tyndall,
I said, mind to mind.
What, master?
He said, with a certain note of irritation in his voice that told me he was talking to a pretty girl.
You're done here.
Take your army back to our camp. Feed 'em, toast 'em, pay 'em, and send them on their way. Tell Bannermore to grab lunch. We'll return to our errands afterward.
Master, you aren't arrested, are you?
He asked anxiously. Everything is under control. They're booting the censorate out on their asses all the way to the frontier. I'm going to eat lunch with the Baron. Tell Alia I'll be home after, and assure her I'm all right, as soon as you're done making a play for that pretty lass.
What? Master, how did you—
Save it. Just hurry up, do your business, then get to doing mine. I opened my eyes and smiled. Baron Arathaniel was looking at me, curiously.
Were you not going to instruct your apprentice?
He asked.
Oh, I just did,
I said, realizing that he wasn't aware of our abilities. Just a harmless little spell. He's been instructed. Whether he'll do it or not, I said, trailing off. He chuckled.
I have 4 daughters, 2 sons, and a castle full of fosterlings. I understand the impetuosity of youth. Now, I'm most anxious to learn of last summer's Wilderland campaign.
We spent nearly 2 hours chatting in his luxurious tent, and I told him my story, from Faris to Boval Vale to the Alshari wilderness, and then to Sevendor, my reward. He had me stop and retell parts, particularly those which dealt with ducal politics. Arathaniel might not have been powerful enough himself to be a player, but he was an avid spectator of the blood sport of feudal politics. When I finished, he looked at me and sighed over his meat. His servants had provided us with a delightful egg and vegetable pie, 1/2 a chicken each, and a ewer of wine. The bread was of excellent quality, and asked pointedly,
So, Rad really is going to make himself king.
That seems to be his intent, I agreed.
That will mean war. With Merwin, perhaps with Vor,
he decided, but not for a few years at least.
This dead god, however, and dragons.
It's worse than I've told you, I agreed. I hadn't mentioned the other horrors the goblins had spawned, from the soulless, human slaves spared from sacrifice if they would slay but 5 of their closest kin, to the horrible tortures they inflicted on their prisoners before sacrifice. He looked disturbed enough by the thought of war with non-humans, but with some ingenuity and some wisdom, I think we can hold them at bay for a while, as long as they don't take the Riverlands. Arathaniel looked at me as if I was joking. When it was clear I was not, he shook his head.
Now I wish I'd kicked you out with the censors, Mage Lord.
You have given me enough to disturb my sleep for weeks. Then you are in good company, including His Grace and every high mage in the duchies. Best you are prepared, my lord, I suggested, for your people, if nothing else.
Oh, I quite agree. A lord cannot allow his personal fears to falter his wisdom.
I shall take what steps I can. But concerning Gimbal, I would be open to discussing some sort of alliance, after the fair is good and truly over. Gimbal's ambitions are unchecked by reason, and my 81 lance advantage won't hold true for long, should he make an effort.
Surely you are not without allies, I suggested.
Arathaniel shrugged.
Some. A few. The Lensley name still has power, in places. Trestendor looks to us, for instance, though Sire Sigalan has not sworn fealty to me.
He seems to prize his independence, I pointed out.
Yes, well, he prized it so much he lost his most lucrative lands to the Warbird, he said sourly. Had he been a liegeman of mine, I would have been compelled to march on Westphalia. And there are others.
I was starting to realize feudal politics was full of this sort of obligation and opportunity. No one but the gods may foresee what the summer holds, I said,
both diplomatically and mysteriously. Now that there are mage lords in the country, the rules have changed, and you can expect more magi before winter traversing your domains, I added, and then told him about my plans to host a magical fair. He looked surprised, then troubled, then pleased. That would not conflict with my fair, he agreed, and may actually help it. Keep me apprised of your plans, Mage Lord, and I shall see what we can do to help. Before I left, he wanted a small demonstration of magic. He had been fascinated by it for years, but had no talent. So, to show off, I cast a large mage light to hover over his trestle, and I gave it enough power to last for weeks, long after the tent was packed up. He was impressed. The little canvas room became a lot easier to read in, and he was so grateful he invited my lady and me to the castle in 3 days for the Baron's Feast, a traditional fete of the leading local nobility to end the fair and reward the victors. I told him I would be honored. At least 2 hours had passed since I'd arrived, and it was starting to get late. Of further concern were the clouds I saw moving in from the west. I considered sending to camp for a horse, or hitching a ride on a wagon making the rounds, but that seemed like a lot of effort. Instead, I completed my interrupted business on the fairgrounds and decided to stop in at the List Field one more time, as it was on the way back to camp. Bannermore was waiting outside of Arathaniel's mighty tent at a little temporary inn across the street, talking to merchants and petty lords and fending off the advances of a couple of overweight whores who were bored with the lack of business. In truth, they would have fared better in dimmer light.
That was impressive,
Bannermore said, as we were heading back toward the fairgrounds proper. The pavilion? I asked. I thought so too. You could fit an entire village in there.
No, Mage Lord, he said,
although from the tone of his voice he could have said idiot just as well.
I meant how you acted when we were attacked.
I shrugged. I'm actually amazed we got out without anyone getting killed.
In truth, that's what I expected. Myself, that is. The moment I saw those cloaks.
That was a dandy Tanglefoot spell, I offered.
I'm not fishing for compliments, he insisted. I'm telling you that I'm grateful. I thought we were dead, and you, well, you talked and spelled your way out of it, and I saw not one drop of sweat on your brow.
I sweat afterward, I promised him. I knew they weren't going to do anything too rash, or if they did, there wouldn't have been anything I could have done about it. I just had to get the people out of the way.
Exactly,
he agreed. I would have taken to my heels. You thought about the other people, and you didn't panic. Nor you, I reminded him.
Me? I was in shock, staring into the abyss of raw terror, my life flashing in front of me. You're a renegade mage lord with Irionite. I'm an illegal foot wizard with Irionite. Do you know what they do to our folk when we don't have cataclysmically powerful magical artifacts in our pockets? I was shitting my pants, but you didn't blink. Hells, you stopped to light your goddamned pipe.
I've been to war, I shrugged, and I was just stalling.
It's more than that, he dismissed. No disrespect, Mage Lord, but lots of idiots go to war. Lots of idiots get knighted, even.
Few of those idiots could have gotten out of that situation with a whole hide, much less without casualties.
You were a good mage, Lord, he said, as if the admission had cost him an ounce of gold.
I have a hard time hearing gratitude like that. I try to take it graciously, but it makes me uncomfortable. I tried to parry it back to him, and that gave me an idea.
Well, as this was your first official battle in which you didn't take to your heels, but stayed to defend your liege, I said, rummaging through the bundle on my back, in token of my esteem and appreciation, here.
You earned it. I held out a mage blade, one of the smaller ones. It had the checkered crest of the censorate on the guard, but that could be fixed. It wasn't particularly heavily enchanted, either, I realized. A good blade, but hardly much more than a sword.
You said you were grateful, right?
Well, this is a token of my gratitude.
You're welcome.
He looked at it like it was a snake.
I'm not a mage, Lord, or even a lord.
You are the head of the Sevendor Village Council and my spell warden, and so can bear the blade under my auspices. Just don't draw it if you get pissed off. From what I just saw, that might prove expensive.
I won't. Wait, I can?
he asked, confused.
How?
You are technically my yeoman, I reminded him, pushing it into his hands, and possibly a burger, if Seven Door keeps growing. So keep the blade. You may end up a mage knight yet.
I'll likely cut my own arm off with it, he grumbled, tucking the weapon into his belt. But if the mage lord insists...
I do. I even want you to learn the basics of how to use it. But I don't intend to call you to battle. I'd just like the people around me to be able to protect themselves. I don't expect much. Just learn which end to hold, and you'll find that the peasants treat you with a lot more respect when you wear it. Now, what did you learn while I was in conference with the Baron?
Me? Learn something?
I was merely having a mug, I assure you, he said, then snickered.
All right. I met with two Merwini cloth merchants, and both said they would take all the red clay, the Lordin.
They can get 90 silver ounces per hundredweight. I showed them the brick Sire Sigalan brought me, and they nearly begged for it. Is that a fair price? I know nothing of such things. It costs less than a silver ounce in labour to harvest and refine it, he said, smiling dreamily. And that's a good wage in Trestendor for a week's work. Sigalan has two families of Verlaines on it, so they can harvest maybe 3-4 bricks a day. 6 bricks to the hundredweight. We pay shipping until the ocean port, and then they take delivery from there.
Excellent.
And my fee is roughly 10 silver ounces per hundredweight after shipping, he said softly. And Lord Sigalan gets 20. I get the rest. That's just shy of 50 ounces of silver per hundredweight. Not to mention more magic rocks, I added, which are worth far more than the clay.
Of course, Mage Lord,
he agreed smugly. I sought such base impurities from the clay myself in the purification process, but if I can make an additional 50 silver ounces along the way, it cannot hurt Seven Door's prosperity, can it? I couldn't argue with that, and it would help my friend Sire Sigalan keep his borders with the Warbird secure. Earning 10 silver ounces a day was like having a prosperous farm fall into your lap in manorial economics. Better. If it worked out well, the Lordin operation might prove the most lucrative part of Trestendor's estate. And putting 5 ounces a day in my own treasury, when I didn't have to do or own anything, was extremely pleasant. We finished our errands in the last few hours of the afternoon, the sun beating down mercilessly on us while we traded. We were making our way back to camp afterwards, when we decided to stop by the lists again and see a few lances broken before we went home, when the tall, boyish figure of Sir Festalin, sweating through his armour, seemed to pop out of nowhere.
"Mage Lord, Master Bannermore, come quick!"
he insisted excitedly. Bannermore and I exchanged worried glances. Then, to his credit, Bannermore slid his new blade around where he could reach it. "What's wrong, Fess?" I asked, skipping the formality of title.
"Nothing's wrong, Mage Lord. At least, not really. It's just that Sir Kay is on the leaderboard,"
he said, bursting with pride.
"He's number 4 overall. Gods be with him, he has but one bout to win to advance to the finals, and the competition is almost done for the day. Hurry!"